closed her eyes and kissed his soft lips as a tear rolled down her cheek. His arms closed around her, hugging her tight against the heat of him. She pulled back breathlessly. Her voice at last returned.
Yes.
She kissed him again.
Please, yes.
Kaylin laid her head against his shoulder. Richard gently stroked her hair as she listened to his breathing and the crackle of the fire. He held her tenderly and kissed the top of her head, there being no need for words. She felt safe in his arms. Kaylin let loose her pain, the pain of loving him more than life itself and thinking he had been tortured to death by the Mord Sith before she could tell him how much she loved him. The pain of having thought she could never have him because she was a confessor and her power would destroy him. The hurt of how much she needed him, how uncontrollably she loved him. As her anguish expended itself, it was replaced by her joy in what lay ahead, a lifetime together. The breathless excitement of it seeped into her. She clutched at him, wanting to melt into him, wanting to be one with him. Kaylin smiled. That was what being married to him would be, being one with him, as Zed had once told her, like finding the other half of herself. When she finally looked up, there was a tear on his face. She wiped the tears from her cheeks, and he did the same. She hoped his tears meant he had let his demons go too.
I love you, she whispered.
Richard pulled her tight against him. His fingers traced a trail down the bumps of her spine. I feel so frustrated that there aren't any better words than I love you, he said. It doesn't seem enough for the way I feel about you. I'm sorry there aren't any better words to tell you. They are words enough for me. Then I love you, Kaylin. 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times, I love you forever. She listened to the snap and pop of the fire, and to his heart beating, to her own heartbeat. He rocked her gently. She wanted to stay there in his arms forever. Suddenly the world seemed a wonderful place. Richard grasped her shoulders and held her away to better see her. A wonderful smile spread across his face. I can't believe how beautiful you are. I have never seen anyone as beautiful as you. He ran a hand down her hair. I'm so glad I didn't cut your hair that time. You have beautiful hair. Don't ever change it. I'm a confessor, remember? My hair is a symbol of my power. Besides, I can't cut it. Only another can do that. Good. I would never cut it. I love you the way you are, power and all. Don't ever let anyone cut it. I've liked your long hair ever since the first day I saw you in the Heartland Woods. She smiled as she remembered that day. Richard had offered her help in escaping from the quads. He had saved her life. It seems so long ago. Will you miss that life, being a simple, carefree woods guide? She smiled coquettishly. And single? Richard grinned. Single? Not with you as my wife. But a woods guide? Maybe a little. He stared off at the fire. I guess that for better or worse, I am the true seeker. I hold the sword of truth and the responsibilities that go with it, whatever they are. Do you think you can be happy being the wife of the seeker? I would be happy living in a tree stump if you were there with me. But Richard, I'm afraid I'm still the mother confessor. I have responsibilities too. Well, you told me what it meant to be a confessor, how when you touch someone with your power, it forever destroys who they were, replacing it with absolute magical devotion to you, to your wishes. And in that way, you can have them confess the truth of their crimes. Or for that matter, you can make them do anything you would wish. But what other responsibilities do you have? I guess I never told you about everything else that it means to be the mother confessor. It wasn't important at the time. I didn't think we could ever be together. I thought we would die, or even if we somehow won, you would go home to Westland, and I would never see you again. You mean the part about it meaning that you are more than a queen? She nodded. The Central Council of the Midlands in Adendrill is made up of representatives of the more important lands of the Midlands. Together, the Central Council more or less rules the Midlands.
Even though the lands are independent, they still bow to the word of the Central Council. In that way, through the Confederation of Lands, common goals are protected and peace is maintained. It keeps people talking instead of fighting. If one land were to attack another, it would be viewed as an attack against unity, against all, and all would put the aggression down. Kings, queens, rulers, officials, merchants, and others come to the Central Council to petition for what they want. Trade agreements, boundary treaties, accords dealing with magic, an endless list of wants and wishes.
I understand. It's something like that in Westland. The Council rules in much the same way. Although Westland isn't nearly big enough to have kingdoms, there are districts that govern themselves but are represented by councillors in Heartland. Since my brother was a councillor and then first councillor, I was around the dealings of government. I saw the councillors coming from different places to ask for things. Being a guide, I was always leading them to and from Heartland. I learned a lot about it from talking to them. Richard folded his arms. So, what is the Mother Confessor's part in it?
Well, the Central Council rules the Midlands. She cleared her throat as she looked down at her hands in her lap. And the Mother Confessor rules the Central Council.
His arms came unfolded. You mean to say that you rule all the kings and queens, all the lands? You rule the Midlands?
Well, yes, in a way, I guess. You see, not all the lands are represented on the Central Council. Some are too small, like Queen Melina's Tamarang, and the Mud People, and a few others are lands of magic. The Land of the Night Wisps, for example. The Mother Confessor is the advocate for these lesser lands. Left to their own wishes, the council would decide to carve up these smaller lands, and they have the armies to do it easily. Only the Mother Confessor stands for those who have no voice. The other problem is that these lands are often in disagreement. Some have been bitter adversaries for as long as anyone can remember. The council is often deadlocked as rulers or their representatives each stubbornly demands his own way, to the detriment of the greater interests of the Midlands. The Mother Confessor has no interest but the good of the Midlands. Without leadership, the different lands through the Central Council would only be interested in vying for power. The Mother Confessor counters those parochial interests with a larger view, with direction and leadership. Just as the Mother Confessor is the final arbiter of truth through her magic, she is also the final arbiter of power. The word of the Mother Confessor is law.
So it is you who tells all the kings and queens, all the lands, what to do?
She took one of his hands and held it. I, and most of the Mother Confessors before me, let the Central Council decide for themselves what they wish, how they want the Midlands ruled. But when they fail to come to agreement, or to a just agreement, it is to the disadvantage of those not represented. Only then do I step in and tell them how it shall be.
And they always do as you say?
Always.
Why? She took a deep breath.
Well, they know that if they don't bow to the Mother Confessor's leadership, they will be alone and vulnerable to any stronger neighbor who craves power. There would be war until the strongest among them crushed all the rest, as Darkin Rall's father Panis Rall did in Dahara. They know that ultimately it is in their own interest to have an independent council leader who sides with no land.
But it's not in the best interest of the strongest. Something other than a good heart or common sense must keep the strongest of these lands in line. She nodded with a smile.
You understand the games of power well. You are right. They know that if they were bold enough to allow their ambitions a free rein, I or any of the confessors could take their ruler with our magic. But there is more. The wizards back the Mother Confessor.
I thought wizards didn't want anything to do with power.
They don't, exactly. The threat of their intervention makes it unnecessary. Wizards call it the paradox of power. If you have power and are ready, able, and willing to use it, you don't need to exercise your power. The lands know that if they don't work together and use the impartial leadership of the Mother Confessor, then the wizards are always in the background ready to teach the disadvantages of being unreasonable or greedy. The whole thing is a very complex interwoven relationship, but what it all comes down to is that I rule the Central Council, and if I'm not there to do so, the weak, the defenseless, and the peaceful will eventually be overrun, and the rest will be drawn into a war until all but the strongest are crushed." Richard sank back to contemplate this with a slight frown on his face. She watched the firelight play on his features. She could feel what he was thinking about. He was remembering the way she had, with only a gesture of her hand, demanded that Queen Melina fall to her knees, kiss the Mother Confessor's hand, and swear loyalty. She wished she hadn't had to show him the power she wielded, and how much she was feared. But what she had done had been necessary. Some deferred only to power. When necessary, a leader had to show that power or be cut down. When he looked up at last, his face held a serious cast. "There is going to be trouble. The wizards are all dead. They killed themselves before they sent you looking for Zed. The threat backing the Mother Confessor is gone. The other confessors are all dead, killed by Dark and Rawl. You are the last. You have no allies. There is no one to take your place if anything happens to you. Zed told us to meet him in Adendrill. He must know this too. From what I have seen of powerful people, from counselors in my homeland, even my own brother, to queens here, to Dark and Rawl, they will view you as a lone obstacle in their way. If the Midlands is to be kept from being torn apart, the Mother Confessor must rule. And you are going to need help. You and I both must serve the truth. I'm going to help you." A sly smile parted his lips. If those counselors were afraid to plot against the Mother Confessor or give her trouble because of the wizards, wait until they meet the Seeker. Kaelin touched her fingers to his face. "You are a rare person, Richard Cipher. You are with the most powerful person in the Midlands, yet you make me feel as if I am riding your coattails to greatness. I'm nothing more than the one who loves you with all my heart. That is the only greatness I wish to live up to," Richard sighed. "It seemed a lot simpler when it was just you and me all by ourselves in the woods, and I cooked you dinner on a stick over an open fire." He gave her a sidelong glance. "You are still going to let me cook your dinner, aren't you, Mother Confessor?"
"I don't think Mistress Sanderholt would like that. She doesn't like anyone in her kitchens."
"You have a cook?"
"Well, I've never seen her cook anything, come to think of it. Mostly she just whisks all about, ruling her domain with a wooden spoon she wields like a scepter, tasting food and scolding cooks, assistants, and scullions. She is the head cook. She frets something awful when I come down to the kitchens to cook. Mistress Sanderholt begs me to take up another interest. She says I scare her people. She says they shake for the rest of the day whenever I come to the kitchens and ask for pots, so I try not to do it too often. But I do so like to cook." Kaelin smiled at the memory of Mistress Sanderholt. It was long months since she had been home.
"Cooks," Richard muttered to himself. "I've never had anyone cook for me. I always cook for myself." His smile returned. "Well, I guess this Mistress Sanderholt will be able to make a little room for me if I want to cook you something special. I would wager that you will soon have her doing whatever it is you wish."
He squeezed her hand. "Will you promise me one thing? Promise me that one day you will let me take you back to Westland and show you some of the beautiful places in the Heartland Woods, places that only I know of? I've dreamed of taking you to them."
"I would like that," Kaelin whispered.
Richard leaned forward to kiss her. Before his lips touched hers, before his arms could embrace her, he winced in pain. His head sagged forward against her shoulder as he moaned. Kaelin clasped him to her in fear, then laid him back down as he clamped his arms to his head, unable to breathe. Panic gripped her. He pulled his knees up to his chest as he rolled onto his side. She braced her hand on his shoulder as she leaned over to him.
"I'm going to get Nissel. I'll go as fast as I can."
He could only nod as he shook. Kaelin ran to the door, pushing it open, out into the still night. She could see her ragged breaths in the frigid air as she pushed the door closed. Her eyes flicked over the short wall. Moonlight washed the top of it with a silver cast. The chickens were gone. A dark shape hunched, still, behind the wall. It moved a little in the moonlight. And there was a quick flash of shiny, golden eyes. Chapter 7. The dark thing rose up, claws rasping over the top of the short wall. It laughed a low cackle that sent goosebumps up her arms to the base of her neck. Kaylin froze. Breath caught in her throat. The form was a black void in the pale moonlight. After the brief flash, the eyes had vanished into a pool of night. Her mind raced, trying to fit what she knew with what she was seeing. She wanted to run, but didn't know which way. Toward Richard or away? Though she couldn't see the eyes, she could feel them like cold death. The tiniest of sounds rose from her throat. With a howling laugh, the dark shape leaped to the top of the wall. The heavy door crashed open behind her, banging against the wall of the spirit house. At the same time, she heard the distinctive ring of the Sword of Truth being drawn in anger. The black head snapped toward Richard, the eyes flashing golden again in the moonlight. Richard reached out, snatching her by the arm, and tossed her back through the doorway. As the door rebounded from hitting the wall, he kicked it shut behind himself. From behind the door, Kaylin heard a howling laugh, and then there was a crash against the door. She came to her feet, pulling her knife. Through the door, she could hear the sword tip whistle and bodies thudding against the wall of the spirit house. She could hear the screaming howls of laughter. Kaylin threw her shoulder against the door and rolled out into the night. As she sprang to her feet, she saw a small, dark form hurtling toward her. She slashed with her knife and missed. It came again, but before it was on her, Richard kicked it, slamming it back against the short wall. In the moonlight, the Sword of Truth flashed toward the shadow. The blade caught only the wall. A shower of mud brick fragments and plaster exploded into the air. The thing howled in laughter. Richard snatched her back just as the dark shape flew past. She caught it with her blade, ripping through something hard, bone hard. A claw flashed past her face, the sword following, missing. She could hear Richard panting as he searched the darkness. The shadow came out of nowhere and knocked him to the ground. Dark forms tumbled across the dirt. She couldn't tell which was Richard and which was the attacker. Claws flung dirt into the air as it flailed at him. With a grunt, Richard heaved it over the wall. Instantly, it sprang to the top and stood there, eyes flashing golden in the moonlight, cackling that awful laugh as the two of them backed away. It fell silent as it watched them walking backward. The air was suddenly alive with the zip of arrows. Within the space of a heartbeat, a dozen thudded into the black body. Not one missed. A breath later, an equal number followed. The thing panted in laughter. It stood on the wall looking like a black pincushion. Kaylin's jaw dropped as she saw it snap off a handful of arrows that stuck out of its chest. The thing snarled a cackling laugh at them, then blinked as it watched them backing away. She couldn't understand why it just stood there. Another flight of arrows thudded into the black body. It paid no attention, but dropped from the wall to the ground. A dark figure ran forward, spear in hand. From the shadow of the wall, the thing sprang at the runner. The hunter let the spear fly. With impossible speed, the black form ducked to the side, and with its teeth snatched the spear from the air. Laughing, it bit the shaft in half. The hunter who had thrown it backed away, and the thing seemed to lose interest, turning to again watch her and Richard.
"What in the world is it doing?" Richard whispered. "Why did it stop? Why is it just watching us?"
With a cold shock, she knew.
"It's a Skreeling,"
Kaylin whispered more to herself than to him.
"Oh, dear spirits, protect us, it's a Skreeling."
She and Richard were clutching each other's shirt sleeves as they walked backward, watching the Skreeling.
"Get away!" she yelled at the hunters. "Walk! Don't run!"
They answered with another useless flight of arrows.
"This way," Richard said, "between the buildings where it's dark."
"Richard, that thing can see better in the dark than we can see in the light. It's from the underworld." He kept his eyes on the Skreeling, standing in the open, in the moonlight.
I'm listening. What else can we do?
She shook her head. I don't know.
But don't run and don't stand still. That attracts its attention. I think the only way to kill it may be to hack it apart.
He looked over to her, his eyes angry in the moonlight. What do you think I've been trying to do?
Kaelin looked around at the small passageway they were entering.
Maybe we should go through here after all. Maybe it will stay there and we can get away. If not, at least we can lead it away from the others.
The Skreeling watched them backing away and then started loping after them, panting a wicked laugh.
Nothing is ever easy, Richard muttered.
They backed through the narrow passageway of smooth, plastered walls, the Skreeling following. Kaelin could see the dark knot of hunters following it in, could feel the pounding of her heart.
I wanted you to stay in the spirit house. Why didn't you stay there where you were safe?
She recognized the tone of rage from the sword's magic. Her hand holding his shirt sleeve felt warm and wet. She looked over and saw blood running down his arm over her hand.
Because I love you, you big ox, and don't you dare do anything like that again.
If we get out of this alive, I'm going to put you over my knee.
They kept backing down the twisting passageway.
If we get out of this alive, I will let you. What happened to your headache?
Richard shook his head.
I don't know.
One second I could hardly breathe, and the next it was gone. As soon as it was gone, I could feel that thing on the other side of the door, and I heard it make that awful laugh.
Maybe you just thought you could sense it because you heard it.
I don't know.
That could be, but it was the strangest feeling. She pulled him by his shirt sleeve down the side passage. It was darker. Moonlight fell high up on a wall to their left. With a start, she saw the dark shape of the Skreeling skittering across the moonlit wall like some huge black bug. Kaelin had to force herself to draw a breath.
How can it do that? Richard whispered.
She had no answer. Behind them, torches appeared. Hunters were closing in around them, trying to bottle up the attacker. Richard looked around. If these people try to get this thing, it's going to kill the lot of them. They stepped into a moonlit intersection of passageways.
Kaelin, I can't let that happen.
He looked to his right, down toward a group of hunters coming with torches.
Go to those men. Get behind them.
Richard, I'm not leaving. He shoved her.
Do as I say now.
His tone made her jump. Involuntarily, she backed away. Richard stood still in the moonlight, holding the sword in both hands, the tip resting on the ground. He looked up at the Skreeling hanging on the wall. It howled a laugh, as if suddenly recognizing the figure standing before it. The Skreeling let go with its claws, dropping straight down, landing in the darkness with a thud. Kaelin could see the angry set of Richard's jaw as he watched the blur racing toward him, kicking up a cloud of dust. The sword's tip stayed on the ground.
This can't be happening, she thought. It just can't. Not when everything is finally right. This thing could kill him. It could really kill him. It could be the end of everything.
The thought stopped her breath. Her confessor's blood rage roared to the surface. Her flesh tingled. The Skreeling sprang into the air toward Richard. The sword tip snapped upward, impaling the dark, flailing form. She could see a good foot and a half of steel sticking from its back, glinting in the moonlight. The Skreeling again howled its terrible laughter. It clawed at the sword, pulling itself up by the blade toward Richard. It severed some of its own clawed fingers as it clutched at the blade, thrashing ahead. Richard gave the sword a mighty swing. The Skreeling slid off, slamming against the wall. Without pause, it sprang for him again. Already, Richard was swinging the sword. Kaelin felt a rush of panicked anger. Without even realizing what she was doing, she had her arm up, her fist toward the thing trying to kill Richard, the man she loved, the only man she would ever love. The Skreeling was nearly upon him, the sword completing its swing. Kaelin felt the power surge through her in a choking rush. She released it. Eerie blue light exploded from her fist, rending the night with a blinding flash of blue daylight. The sword and the bolt of blue lightning hit the Skreeling at the same time. The Skreeling burst apart in a shower of bloodless black pieces.
Kaelin had seen the Sword of Truth do the same thing to living flesh. She didn't know if it was the sword or the blue lightning that had done it this time. The crack of thunder from the bolt left her ears ringing in the sudden silence. She ran to Richard and threw her arms around him as he hunched, panting. "Are you all right?" He hugged her with his free hand, nodding. She held him for a long minute as shouting hunters with torches circled around them. Richard slid the sword back into its scabbard. In the torchlight, she could see a ragged gash on his upper arm. She tore off a strip of his shirt sleeve and tied it around the bleeding wound. She looked around at the hunters, all of whom held either nocked arrows or spears. "Is everyone safe?" Chandelin stepped into the torchlight and spoke to Kaelin. "I knew you would bring trouble." She peered hard at his face, then merely thanked him and his men for trying to help. "Kaelin, what was that thing? And what in the world did you do?" Richard was slumping. She slipped her arm around his waist. "I think it's called a skreeling, and I'm not entirely sure what I did." "A skreeling? What is a—" His hands came to the sides of his head as his eyes winced shut. He sank to his knees. Kaelin wasn't able to hold his weight. Savinland was there and reached for him, but before he could get an arm around him, Richard fell forward on his face. He cried out in the dirt, "Savinland, help me get him back to the spirit house and send someone for Nissel. Please tell them to hurry." Savinland shouted for one of his men to run for the healer. He and some of the others lifted Richard. Leaning on his spear, Chandelin only watched. A torchlit procession wound its way back to the spirit house. Savinland and the men carrying Richard went inside with Kaelin. They laid Richard in front of the fire, lowering his head to the blanket. Savinland sent his men out but stayed with her. Kaelin knelt next to Richard and with trembling hands felt his forehead. He was ice cold and drenched in sweat. He appeared to be nearly unconscious. She bit her lip and tried not to cry. "Nissel will make him well," Savinland said. "You will see. She is a good healer. She will know what to do." Kaelin could only nod. Richard mumbled incoherently as his head twisted about, as if seeking some position that brought no pain. They sat in silence until Savinland asked, "Mother Confessor, what was that you did? How did you make lightning?" "I'm not sure how I did it, but it is part of the Confessor's magic. It is called the Kandar." Savinland studied her a moment as he squatted on his feet, with his sinewy arms wrapped around his knees. "I never knew a Confessor could call down lightning." She glanced over. "I have known for only a few days myself." "And what was that dark thing?" "I think it may be a creature from the underworld." "From the place the shadows came from before?" Kaelin nodded. "Why would it come now?" "I'm sorry, Savinland. I don't have an answer. But if any more come, tell the people to walk away from them. Don't stand still and don't run. Just walk away and come get me." In silence, he contemplated what she had said. At last, the door squeaked open, and a stooped figure, flanked by two men with torches, entered. Kaelin sprang up and ran to her, taking her hand. "Nissel, thank you for coming." Nissel smiled and patted her shoulder. "How is the arm, Mother Confessor?" "Healed, thanks to you. Nissel, something is wrong with Richard. He has terrible headaches." Nissel smiled. "Yes, child. We will have a look at him." One of the men with Nissel handed her a cloth bag as she knelt beside Richard. The objects in the bag clinked against one another as she set it on the ground. She told the man to bring the torch around. She took off the bloody bandage and, with her thumbs, pressed open the wound. Nissel glanced to Richard's face to see if he felt it. He didn't. "I will tend to the wound first while he sleeps." She cleaned the gash and stitched it while Kaelin and the three men watched in silence. The torches spit and hissed, lighting the inside of the nearly empty spirit house with harsh flickering light. On the shelf, the skulls of ancestors watched along with the rest of them. Sometimes, talking to herself as she worked, Nissel finished sewing, packed the wound with a poultice that smelled of pine pitch, and wrapped the arm with a clean bandage. Rummaging around in her bag, she told the men they could leave. As he went past, Savinlin touched Kaelin's shoulder sympathetically and told her he would see them in the morning. After they were gone, Nissel halted her pawing in the bag and looked up at Kaelin. "I hear you are to be mated to this one," Kaelin nodded. "I thought you couldn't have a love, because you are a confessor, that your power would take him when you make babies." Kaelin smiled across Richard to the old woman. "Richard is special. He has magic that protects him from my power." They both had promised Zed they would never reveal the truth, that it was his love for her that protected him. Nissel smiled, and her weathered hand touched Kaelin's arm. "I am happy for you, child." She bent back to her bag and finally pulled out a handful of little stoppered pottery bottles. "Does he get these headaches often?" "He told me he gets bad headaches sometimes, but that this is different, that it hurts more, like something is trying to get out of his head. He said he has never had any like it before. Do you think you can help him?" "We will see." Pulling stoppers, she waved the bottles one at a time under his nose. One of them finally brought Richard awake. Nissel smelled the bottle herself to see what it was. She nodded and mumbled and went back into her bag.
"What's going on?" Richard groaned.
Kaelin bent over and kissed his forehead. "Nissel is going to do something for your headaches. Lie still." Richard's back arched as he squeezed his eyes shut against the pain. He put his shaking fists to the sides of his head. The healer pressed his chin down with her fingers, forcing his mouth open, and with her other hand shoved in some small leaves. "Tell him to chew. Keep chewing. She says to chew the leaves. They will help you." Richard nodded and rolled to his side in agony as he chewed. Kaelin combed his hair back with her fingers, feeling helpless, wishing she could do more. It terrified her to see him in pain. Nissel poured a liquid from a skin into a large cup and mixed into it powders from other jars. She and Kaelin helped Richard sit up to drink the concoction. When he finished, he flopped back down, breathing hard but still chewing the leaves. Nissel stood. "The drink will help him to sleep." Kaelin came to her feet, and Nissel handed her a small bag. "Have him chew more of these leaves when he needs them. They will help the pain." Kaelin hunched over a little, so as not to tower over the old woman quite so much. "Nissel, do you know what is wrong?" Nissel pulled the stopper from the little bottle and sniffed it, then held it under Kaelin's nose. It smelled of lilacs and licorice.
"Spirit," she said simply.
"Spirit? What do you mean?"
"It is a sickness of his spirit, not of his blood, not of his balance, not of his air. Spirit."
Kaelin didn't know what any of that meant, but it wasn't really what she wanted to know. Will he be all right? Will the medicine and the leaves, will they cure him? Nissel smiled and patted Kaelin's arm.
"I would like very much to be there when you are wed. I will not give up. If this doesn't work, there are other things to try."
Kaelin took her arm and walked her out the door. "Thank you, Nissel." Kaelin saw Chandelin standing near the short wall. Some of his men stood farther off in the darkness. Brynden was close, against the spirit house. She went to him. "Would you escort Nissel home, please?"
"Of course."
He took the healer's arm respectfully and guided her into the night. Kaelin shared a long look with Chandelin and then went over to him. "I appreciate you and your men guarding us. Thank you." He regarded her without emotion.
"I am not standing guard for you. I am guarding our people from you, from what you may bring next."
Kaelin brushed dirt from her shoulders. "Either way, if something else comes, don't try to kill it yourself. I don't want any mud people to die. That includes you. If something comes, you must not stand still or run. If you do, it will kill you. You must walk. Come and get me. Don't try to fight it by yourselves, understand? Come and get me. He still showed no emotion.
And you will call down more lightning?
She looked at him coolly.
If I have to.
She wondered if she could. She had no idea how she had done it.
Richard with the temper is not well. He may not be able to shoot arrows with you and your men tomorrow.
He looked smug.
I thought he would think of an excuse to back out.
Kaelin took a deep breath through gritted teeth. She didn't want to stand here and trade insults with this fool. She wanted to go back inside to be with Richard.
Good night, Chandelin.
Richard was still on his back, chewing the leaves. She sat beside him, heartened to see that he looked more alert.
These things are starting to taste better.
Kaelin stroked his forehead.
How do you feel?
A little better. The pain comes and goes. I think these leaves are helping. Except they are making my head spin.
But better to spin than to pound.
Yes.
He put his hand on her arm and closed his eyes.
Who were you talking to?
That fool Chandelin. He's guarding the spirit house. He thinks we may bring more trouble.
Maybe he's not such a fool. I don't think that thing would have been here without us.
What did you call it?
A skreeling.
And what is a skreeling?
I'm not sure. Nobody I know has ever seen one. But I've heard them described. They're supposed to be from the underworld.
Richard stopped chewing and opened his eyes to look at her.
The underworld?
What do you know about this skreeling thing?
Not much, she frowned. Have you ever seen Zed drunk?
Zed?
Never. He doesn't like wine, just food. He says that drinking interferes with thinking, and there is nothing more important than thinking.
Richard smiled.
He says that the worse a man is at thinking, the better he is at drinking. Well, wizards can get pretty scary when they're drunk. One time when I was little, I was in the keep studying my languages. They have books of languages there. Anyway, I was studying, and four of the wizards were reading a book of prophecy together. It was a book I had never seen before. They were leaning over it and started getting all worked up. They were talking in hushed tones. I could tell they were frightened. At the time, it was a lot more fun to watch wizards than to read my languages. I looked up and they had all turned white as snow. They all stood up straight at the same time and flipped the cover shut. I remember it banged and made me jump. They all stood there quiet for a while and then one went away and came back with a bottle. Without saying a word, he passed out cups and poured out the drink. They all drank it down in one swallow. He poured more, and they did the same thing again. They sat down on stools around the table the big book was on, and kept drinking until the bottle was empty. By that time, they were pretty happy, and drunk. They were laughing and singing. I thought it was tremendously interesting. I had never seen anything like it. They finally saw me watching them and called me over. I didn't really want to go, but they were wizards, and I knew them pretty well, so I wasn't afraid, and I went over to them. One set me up on his knee and asked if I wanted to sing with them. I told them that I didn't know the song they were singing. They looked at each other and then said they would teach me. So we sat there for a long time, and they taught me the song.
So do you remember it?
Kaelin nodded.
I've never forgotten that song.
She rearranged herself a little and then sang it for him.
The skreelings are loose, and the keeper may win. His assassins have come to rip off your skin. Golden eyes will see you if you try to run. The skreelings will get you and laugh like it's fun. Walk away slow or they'll tear you apart and laugh all day long as they rip out your heart. Golden eyes will see you if you try to stand still. The skreelings will get you, for the keeper they kill. Hack 'em up, chop 'em up, cut 'em to bits, or else they will get you, while laughing in fits. If the skreelings don't get you, the keeper will try to reach out and touch you. Your skin he will fry. Your mind he will flail. Your soul he will take. You'll sleep with the dead, for life you'll forsake. You'll die with the keeper till the end of time. He hates that you live. Your life is the crime. The screelings might get you. It says so in text. If screelings don't get you, the keeper is next. Lest he who's born true can fight for life's bond. And that one is marked. He's the pebble in the pond.
Richard stared at her when she finished. Pretty gruesome song to teach a child. Finally, he resumed chewing the leaves. Kayla nodded with a sigh.
That night, I had terrible nightmares. My mother came into my room and sat on my bed. She hugged me and asked me what I was having nightmares about. I sang her the song the wizards had taught me. She climbed into my bed and stayed with me that night. The next day, she went to see the wizards. I never knew what she did or said to them, but for the next few months, whenever they saw her coming, they turned and hurried off the other way. And for a good long time, they avoided me like death itself.
Richard took another leaf from the little bag and put it in his mouth. The screelings are sent by the keeper of the underworld?
That's what the song says. It must be true. How could anything of this world take that many arrows and just laugh?
Richard thought in silence a moment. What is pebble in the pond? Kalin shrugged.
I've never heard of it before or since.
What about the blue lightning? How did you do that?
It's something to do with the Kandar. I did it before, when it came over me the first time.
She took a deep breath at the memory.
When I thought you were dead. I'd never felt the Kandar before, but now I feel it there all the time, just as I can always feel the Confessor's magic. The two are somehow connected. I must have awakened it. I think it's what Addie warned me about that time we were with her. But Richard, I don't know how I did it.
Richard smiled. You never fail to amaze me. If I just found out I could call down lightning, I don't think I would be sitting there so calmly.
Well, you just remember what I can do, she warned, if some pretty girl ever bats her lashes at you.
He took her hand. There are no other pretty girls.
The fingers of her other hand combed through his hair. Is there anything I can do for you?
Yes, he whispered. Lie down next to me. I want you close. I'm afraid of never waking, and I want to be close to you.
You will wake, she promised cheerfully.
She took out another blanket and pulled it over the two of them. She cuddled close, her head on his shoulder and an arm over his chest, and tried not to worry about what he had said. Chapter 8. When she woke, her back was against the warmth of him. Light was seeping in around the edges of the door. She sat up, rubbed the sleep from her eyes, and looked down at Richard. He lay on his back, staring up at the ceiling, taking slow, shallow breaths. She smiled at the familiar pleasure of his face. He was so handsome it made her ache. Suddenly, she realized with a jolt what it was about him that looked so familiar to her. Richard looked like Darkin Rawl. Not the same kind of impossible perfection. The flawlessly smooth, uninterrupted sweep of features that were too exactly right, like some precisely perfect statue, but more rugged, rougher, more real. Before they'd defeated Rawl, when Shota, the witch woman, had appeared to them as Richard's mother, Kalin had seen her looks in Richard's nose and mouth. It was as if Richard had darkened Rawl's face with some of his mother's features, making it better than Rawl's cruel perfection. Rawl's hair was fine, straight, and blonde, while Richard's was coarser and darker. And Richard's eyes were gray instead of Rawl's blue. But they both possessed the same penetrating intensity, the same kind of raptor's gaze that seemed as if it could cut steel. Though she didn't know how it could be possible, she knew Richard had Rawl blood. But Darkin Rawl was from Dahara, and Richard from Westland. That was about as far apart as you could get. It must be, she finally decided, a connection in the distant past. Richard was still staring at the ceiling. She put her hand on his shoulder, giving it a squeeze. How is your head? Richard jumped hard. He looked around and blinked at her. He rubbed his eyes.
What? I was asleep. What did you say?
Kalin frowned. You weren't asleep.
Yes, I was. Sound asleep.
Kalin felt a flutter of apprehension.
Your eyes were wide open. I was watching you.
She left unsaid that, as far as she knew, only wizards slept with their eyes open.
Really?
He looked around.
Where are those leaves?
Here. Does it still hurt bad?
Yes. He sat up. But it's been worse. He put some of the leaves in his mouth and ran his fingers through his hair. At least I can talk. He smiled at her. And I can smile without my face feeling like it's going to break.
Maybe you shouldn't go shoot arrows today if you don't feel well enough.
Savinlin said I couldn't back out. I'm not going to let him down. Besides, I really want to see this bow he's made for me. It's been, well, I don't even remember how long it's been since I shot a bow. After he chewed some of Nissel's leaves for a while, they folded up the blankets and went looking for Savinlin. They found him at his home, listening to Sidon telling stories of what it was like to ride a dragon. Savinlin liked listening to stories. Even though it was a little boy telling them, he listened with the same interest he would accord a hunter returning from a journey. Kaelin noted with pride that the little boy was giving a remarkably accurate rendition, without fanciful embellishment. Sidon wanted to know if he could have a dragon for a pet. Savinlin told him the red dragon was not a pet, but a friend to their people. He told him to find a red chicken, and he could have that. Wesselin was cooking a pot of some sort of porridge with eggs mixed in. She asked Richard and Kaelin to join them, and passed each a bowl as they sat on a skin on the floor. She gave them flat tava bread to fold and use as a scoop for the porridge. Richard had her ask Savinlin if he had a drill of any kind. Savinlin leaned way back, and with a finger and thumb pulled a thin rod from a pouch beneath a bench. He handed the rod to Richard, who had the dragon's tooth out. Richard turned the rod around with a puzzled look, put it at the base of the tooth, and twisted it experimentally. Savinlin laughed. You want a hole in that? Richard nodded. Savinlin held out his hand. Give it to me. I will show you how it is done. Savinlin used his knife point to start a small hole and then held the tooth between his feet as he sat on the floor. He placed a few grains of sand in the hole, followed by the rod. He spat in his palms and then spun the rod back and forth rapidly between his hands, stopping occasionally to drop a few more grains of sand down the hole and wipe a little spittle into the opening. In a little while, he had drilled all the way through the tooth. He used his knife to clean the burrs from where the drill went through the other side of the tooth, and then held it up, grinning, showing off the hole. Richard laughed and thanked him as he strung a leather thong to the tooth. He hung it around his neck with the birdman's whistle and the moored Sith's ajeel. He was getting quite a collection. Some of it she didn't like. Wiping out his porridge bowl with a piece of tava bread, Savitlin asked, "Is your head better?" It's better, but still hurts something fierce. Nissel's leaves help. I'm embarrassed I had to be carried back last night. Savinlin laughed. One time I had a bad hurt here. He pointed at a round scar in his side. I was carried home by women. He leaned closer and lifted an eyebrow. Women! Wesselin cast a disapproving eye toward him. He made a point of not noticing. When my men found out I was carried home by women, they had a good laugh over it. He put the last of the tava bread in his mouth and chewed for a few minutes. Then I told them which women carried me home, and they stopped laughing and wanted to know how to get a hurt like mine so they too could be carried home by those women.
Savinlin,
Wesselin scolded in a scandalized tone. She turned to them. If he didn't already have a hurt, I would have given him one. A good one. So how did you get this hurt? Richard asked.
Savinlin shrugged. Like I told my men, it was easy. You just stand there like a surprised rabbit while a trespasser puts a spear through you.
And why didn't he finish you?
Because I put a few 10-step arrows in him.
He pointed at his throat. Here.
What's a 10-step arrow?
Savinlin reached to the side and pulled a barbed, fine-pointed arrow from his quiver. One of these. See the dark stain? Poison. 10-step poison. When it sticks you, you get only 10 steps and then you are dead. He laughed. My men decided to think of a different way to get those women to carry them.
Wesselin leaned over and stuffed the rest of her tava bread in her husband's mouth. She turned to Kaelin.
Men enjoy telling the most awful stories.
She broke into a shy smile. But I worried for him until he was well. I knew he was well when he came to me and made Sidon. Then I did not worry any more. Kaylin realized she had translated before she had paid attention to the meaning of the words. She felt her ears burn. Instead of looking at Richard, she paid close attention to eating her porridge. She was glad her hair covered her ears, at least. Savinlin gave Richard a look of a put-upon male. You will find that women, too, like to tell stories. Kaylin desperately tried to think of a new direction for the conversation. She couldn't. Thankfully, Savinlin did. He leaned back, looking out the door. It will soon be time to go. How do you know what time we are to go? Savinlin shrugged. I am here, you are here, some of the men are here. When they are all here, that is the time to go. Savinlin went to the corner and retrieved a bow that was taller than the one Kaylin had seen him use before. Taller for Richard. With the aid of his foot, Savinlin stretched the cord to the bow. Richard had a wide grin on his face. He told Savinlin it was the finest bow he had ever seen. Savinlin beamed with pride and gave him a quiver full of arrows. Richard tested the weight of the draw. How did you know how strong to make the pull? It's just right. Savinlin pointed to his chin. I remember how strong your respect for my strength was when we first met. It is too heavy for me, but I estimated it was right for you. Kaylin stood up next to Richard. Are you sure you want to go? How does your head feel? Terrible. But I have the leaves. They help a little. I think I'll be all right. Savinlin is looking forward to this. I don't want to disappoint him. She rubbed her hand on his shoulder. Should I come with you? Richard kissed her forehead. I don't think I'll need anyone to translate to tell me how badly I'm being beaten, and I don't think I want to give Chandelin's men any excuse to humiliate me any worse than they are already going to. Zed told me you were pretty good. In fact, he told me you were better than good. Richard stole a look at Savinlin, who was stringing his own bow. It's been a long time since I've shot a bow. Zed was just trying to stir up trouble, I'll bet. He stole a kiss while Savinlin was finishing, and then went out the door with him. Kaylin leaned against the doorframe, still feeling the print of his lips on hers as she watched him walking away. Showing no emotion, Chandelin stared up from sighting down one of his arrows. Brendan and Tossadin flashed sly smiles. They were looking forward to this. Richard glanced around, meeting the eyes of all the men as he walked past. They fell in behind him. He was a good head taller than any of them. They looked like a bunch of children following an adult. But these children had poison arrows, and some of them didn't hold any favor for Richard. Suddenly, she didn't like this. Wesselin stood next to her, watching the men go. Savinlin said he will watch Richard's back. Don't be concerned. Chandelin would not do anything foolish. I worry about what Chandelin considers foolish. Wesselin wiped her hands on a cloth, turning back to keep a watchful eye on Sidon. Sidon wanted to go out, and was sitting, poking a finger along the ground, looking dejected because his mother said she wanted him to stay inside. Wesselin stood over him a long moment, watching. He looked up, his chin resting in one palm. She gave him a gentle snap with the cloth. Go outside and play. Wesselin sighed as he tore through the door with a squeal of glee. She shook her head to herself. The young don't know how dear life is, or how fragile. Maybe that is why we all wish we were young again. Wesselin nodded. Maybe so. A handsome smile came to her tanned face. Her dark eyes sparkled. What color would you like to wear when you wed your man? With both hands, Kaylin pulled her long hair back over her shoulders and thought a minute. A smile welled up from within. Richard favors blue. Wesselin twined her fingers together. Oh, that would be just right then. I have just the thing. I have been saving it for something special. She went into her small bedroom and came back with a bundle. Sitting on the bench next to Kaylin, she carefully unfolded it in her lap. The cloth was finely woven, a rich blue with a print of lighter blue flowers dappled across it. Kaylin thought it would make a gorgeous dress. She tested the weave between her finger and thumb. It's beautiful.
Where did you get it?
I traded for it. She flicked her hand over her head. With people from the north. They like the bowls I make. I traded with them for it. Kaelin knew fine cloth when she saw it. Weslin would have had to make many bowls for this cloth.
I wouldn't feel right using it, Weslin. You worked hard for this. It is yours.
Weslin held up the corners of the blue fabric, giving it a critical appraisal.
Nonsense. You two come here and teach our people how to make roofs that don't leak. You save Sidon from those shadow things, and in the process rid us of an old fool, and make it so Savitlin can be one of the six elders. He has never been so happy. When Sidon is carried off, you find him and bring him back to us. You destroy the man who would have enslaved us. You two are guardians to our people. What is a piece of cloth?
I will be proud the mother confessor of all the Midlands is wedded in a dress I make. Me, just a simple woman. For you, my friend, from all those faraway places with all those grand things that I cannot even imagine. You would not be taking something from me. You would be giving me something.
Kaelin's eyes filled with tears. Her lower lip trembled.
You can't know the joy you have given me, Weslin. To be a confessor is to be feared. My whole life people have feared and shunned me. No one has ever treated me as just a woman, talked to me as a woman, only as a confessor. No one before Richard ever saw me as a person. No woman before you ever welcomed me into her home. No woman has ever let me hold her child. She wiped away some of the tears. It will be the most beautiful dress I have ever worn, the most treasured dress I will ever have. I will wear it, proud that a friend made it for me.
Weslin gave her a sidelong look. When your man sees you in this dress, he will make you a child of your own.
Kaelin laughed and cried and hugged her. She had never dared to dream that all these things could happen in her life, that she could ever be treated as anything but a confessor.
Kaelin and Weslin spent the better part of the morning starting the dress.
Weslin seemed as excited about making the dress as Kaelin was about wearing it.
The seamstresses back in Aidendrill had nothing over Weslin with her fine bone needles. They settled on a simple design fashioned something like a kirtle. They had a light lunch of tava bread and chicken broth. Weslin said she would work on the dress later and asked what Kaelin wanted to do in the afternoon. Kaelin said she really would like to cook something.
Kaelin never ate meat when she was here before on official business because she knew the mud people ate human flesh, ate their enemies to gain their knowledge. To avoid offending them, she had always used the excuse that she didn't eat meat. The night before, Richard had reacted strongly to eating meat, so Kaelin didn't say anything to change the menu when Weslin suggested a vegetable stew. The two of them cut up tava, some other rust-colored roots Kaelin didn't recognize, peppers, beans, some nutty kuru, and then added greens and dried mushrooms into the big iron kettle hanging over the little fire in the corner cooking hearth. Weslin pushed a few sticks of hardwood into the fire as she told Kaelin the men probably wouldn't be back until dark. She suggested they go to the common area with the other women and bake some tava bread in the ovens.
I would like that, Kaelin said.
We will talk about the wedding with them. Talk of weddings always makes for good conversation, she smiled. Especially when there are no men around.
Kaelin was happy to find that the young women talked to her now. In the past, they had always been too shy. The older women wanted to talk about the marriage. The younger women wanted to talk about faraway places. They wanted to know if it was really true that men followed her orders, that they did as she said. Their eyes were wide as Kaelin told them about the Central Council, and how she protected the interests of peoples like the Mud People from the threat of invasion by more powerful lands, so the Mud People and others in small communities could live as they wished. She explained that although she was able to command people, she did so only because she was the servant to all the people. When they asked if she commanded armies of men in battle, Kaelin told them it wasn't like that. That what she did was try to help the different lands work together so there wouldn't be fighting. They wanted to know how many servants she had and what sorts of fabulous dresses she had. The questions were beginning to make the older women nervous and to frustrate Kaelin. She flopped a ball of dough down on the board,
sending up a little cloud of flour. She looked the younger women in the eye. "The prettiest dress I will ever have will be the dress Wesselin is making me, because she is doing it out of friendship and not because I commanded her to make it. There is no possession to compare to friendship. I would give up everything I have and live in rags and grub for roots just to have one friend." That seemed to quiet the young girls and settle the older women. The chatter drifted back to the subject of the wedding, and Kaylin was happy to let it. She tried to keep out of it, to let the older women lead the talk. Near the end of the afternoon, Kaylin saw a commotion across the field. She saw a taller figure, Richard, taking long strides towards Savidlin and Wesselin's home. Even from a distance, she could tell he was angry. A throng of hunters followed in his wake, trotting at times to keep pace. Kaylin wiped her flour-covered hands on a cloth. She threw the cloth on a table as she stepped off the plank floor of the shelter and jogged the distance to the men. She caught them as they went down a wide passageway. Pushing through the hunters, she finally caught up with Richard just before he reached Savidlin's doorway. Chandelin was right at his heels, along with Savidlin. Chandelin had blood down his shoulder with some kind of mud pack over a wound on top. He looked to be in a mood to chew rocks. She grabbed Richard's sleeve. He spun around with a hot expression that cooled a little when he saw it was her. He removed his hand from the hilt of the sword. "Richard, what's wrong?" He glared around at the men, mostly Chandelin, then settled his gaze back on her. "I need you to translate. We had a little adventure this afternoon. I hadn't been able to make them understand what happened." "I want to know how he could dare to try to kill me," Chandelin was saying over Richard's words.
"What's he talking about? He wants to know why you tried to kill him."
"Kill him? I saved his fool life. Don't ask me why. I should have let him get killed. The next time I will." He ran his fingers through his hair. "My head is killing me." Chandelin pointed angrily at the wound on the top of his shoulder. "You did this deliberately. I saw how you shoot. It could not have been an accident." Richard threw his hands in the air. "Idiot," he said to the sky. He lowered his glare to Chandelin's fierce eyes. "Yes, you saw me shoot. Do you have any doubt that if I wanted to kill you, you would not be breathing right now? Of course I did it deliberately. It was the only way to save you." He reached over her shoulder, putting his hand close to Chandelin's face, holding his first finger and thumb half an inch apart. "This is all the room I had. At the most, if I didn't take it, you would be dead." "What do you mean?" Chandelin demanded. Kaylin put a hand on his arm. "Calm down, Richard. Just tell us what happened." "He couldn't understand me. None of them could. I couldn't explain it to them." He looked at her in frustration. "I killed a man today."
"What?"
she whispered.
"You killed one of Chandelin's men?"
"No, that's not what they're angry about. They're happy I killed him. I was saving Chandelin's life, but they think..." She collected herself. "Just calm down. I will explain your words to them." Richard nodded and rubbed his eyes with the heels of his hands. He looked down at the ground as he combed the fingers of both hands through his hair. He looked back up. "I'm only going to explain this once, Chandelin. If you can't get it through your thick head, then we are going to stand at opposite ends of the village and shoot arrows at each other until we can't argue anymore. And I will only need one arrow." Chandelin lifted an eyebrow and folded his muscular arms. "So, explain." Richard took a deep breath. "You were standing a long way off. For some reason, I knew he was there behind you. I spun around. All I could see of him... here, like this." He grabbed Kaylin by her shoulders and turned her around, facing Chandelin. He held her shoulders and ducked down behind her. "Like this. I couldn't see any of him but the top of his head. He had his spear ready. In 1 second more, he would have put it through your back. I had only one chance to keep him from killing you. Only one chance. I couldn't see enough of him. There was nothing else to shoot at from where I was. Only the very top of his head. The top of his forehead sloped back. If I had hit it too high, the arrow would have deflected off and he would have killed you. The only way to stop him, to kill him, was to let the arrow nick the top of your shoulder." He held his finger and thumb half an inch apart again. "This is all I had.
If I put the arrow that much lower, your bone would have deflected the arrow and he would have had you. If I would have put it that much higher, just enough not to nick you, he would have lived and you would be dead. I knew Savitlin's bladed arrow could pass through a little of your flesh and allow me to kill him. There was no time for anything else. I had to shoot instantly. I think a dozen stitches is a light price to pay for your life. Chandelin's eyes looked a little less sure. How do I know you are telling the truth? Richard shook his head, muttering. He suddenly thought of something. He snatched a cloth sack from one of Chandelin's men. He thrust his hand in the sack and pulled out a head, lifting it by blood-soaked matted hair. Kaelin gasped. She put a hand over her mouth as she turned away, but before she did, she saw an arrow jutting from the center of the forehead, the blade end sticking from the back of the head. Richard held the head behind Chandelin's shoulder and laid the feathers of the shaft on his shoulder next to the wound. This is all I saw. If it were not as I say, if he had been standing straighter and I put the arrow where I did, it would not have touched you. The hunters all started nodding and whispering among themselves. Chandelin looked down at the shaft of the arrow lying on his shoulder. He looked back at the head. He thought about it a minute, and then unfolded his arms and took the head, stuffing it back in the sack. I have been stitched before. A few more will not hurt me. I will take your words as true. This time. Richard put his fists on his hips as he watched Chandelin and his men walking away.
You're welcome,
he called after them. Kaelin didn't translate that. Why do they have that head? Don't ask me, it wasn't my idea, and you don't want to know what they did with the rest of him. Richard, that seems a risky shot to me. How far were you when you shot that arrow? The heat left his voice. Not risky at all, believe me. And I was at least 100 paces. You can shoot an arrow that accurately at 100 paces? He sighed. I'm afraid I could have done it at twice that distance, 3 times that distance. He looked down at the blood on his hands. I have to go wash this off. Kaelin, in about 2 minutes my head is going to explode. I have to sit down. Could you please go get Nissel? Yelling at that idiot was the only thing keeping me on my feet. She put a hand on his arm.
Of course. Go on inside. I'll go get her.
I think Savinlin is angry with me, too. Please tell him that I'm sorry I ruined so many of his arrows. She frowned as Richard went inside, closing the door. Savinlin looked as if he was about to speak to her. She took him by the arm.
Richard needs Nissel. Come with me and tell me what happened.
Savinlin cast a glance over his shoulder at the door to his home as they hurried away. Richard with the temper seems to be living up to his name. He is upset because he killed a man. It is not an easy thing to live with. He didn't tell you all the story. There was more to it.
So tell me.
He looked over with a grave expression. We were shooting. Chandelin was angry because of the shot.